IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport. Playing catch up podcast. We have a lot to catch up on. We have not been here in quite a while. Before we dig in, it's been so long that Alyssa moved across the country and she is now recording and reporting live from Syracuse, New York. Alyssa, how was the cross country journey with two dogs and a baby?
I cried a lot. I was so nervous to fly. But we made it in one piece. We had one dog flying with my mom back to Long Island, and then my dad drove him up, one dog driving with Luke across the country because he is too big and definitely not the personality to be on a plane. And then I flew to the Southeast Cup for my club team, and then from there to Syracuse. So it was a journey and we survived.
A journey, we survived. Now we're all on the East Coast. The last time that we spoke collectively as a pod crew, it was prior to Memorial Day weekend. There was quite a bit of decent action that occurred over the stretch of that weekend at Towson. Rachel, Final Four weekend heading in. I don't know if we said it on the podcast or, you know, when we were connecting beforehand, we thought that we were going to see the North Carolina Northwestern showdown, that everyone had, certainly been keeping their fingers crossed. They wanted to see the two perfect teams. We didn't get to see that. Syracuse Boston College advanced. Can you just talk about that semifinal action that left, I think, the lacrosse world a little shocked that we weren't going to see a Wildcat Tar Heel battle?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say, I really miss you guys. I'm so glad we're back doing this. It feels like a year has gone by. That feels like a little bit of a lifetime ago, but yeah, I mean, that's how I had my finals. Those two teams were like destined to meet for a national championship. Clearly we did not see that happen, but, I think kudos to Syracuse. Obviously we've got a lot to dig in on that front, but, really just stepped up when it mattered most. Charlotte North, I think, just continued to elevate her game. It was two upsets, really, if we're being honest. Like, that's not what was supposed to happen. So, you know, anything can happen in the Final Four. I definitely was wrong in my picks there. But happy to see it. That was one of those finals where oftentimes you have somebody that you want to win. I'm sure you guys still did as CUSA alums, but watching it, like, you know, I was going to be, like, overjoyed for either team because they both are just incredible groups of women and coaching staff. So, it kind of felt like a win-win for the lacrosse community, even though we didn't get, you know, the North Carolina Northwestern game that we all thought we would.
It was, before I have my own opinions, on that championship game and what it was like, you know, covering that game as a Syracuse alum, of course. But before I do, Alyssa, you weren't on site covering for IL Women. You were on site in your Syracuse orange. Again, when Syracuse shocked Northwestern, you booked a last minute flight, had to make some babysitter magic happen to be there. What was that experience like, you know, traveling and supporting a team that, I think a lot of those girls know who you are, but you're pretty far removed. But the alumni. The tradition runs deep within your veins. What was it like?
It was so fun. First, I hadn't been to a college game probably in 2 years because I wasn't at any in 2020. So it was really awesome to just be there and like see the game live. I think it's so different. It's the same thing as like any sports game. I always feel like anytime I'd watched the NBA on TV, you're like, oh, it's kind of boring. And then you see it live and you're like, oh, okay. It's entertaining. So being able to see it in person was just awesome. And, you know, obviously reconnect with so many people and just be in a relatively packed stadium.
Packed for COVID. It was packed, right? Packed COVID for the last year. COVID. Asterisk COVID packed.
Yeah. And so just to like be around that many people and like, you know, the excitement And you're right, it really was a win-win for the lacrosse community because there was a new champion. Was super excited for Kayla Trainer to get her first and long-awaited national championship. And obviously heartbroken for Syracuse that they weren't able to get it. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is that they overcame so much to get there. And, you know, all said and done, I would say probably Syracuse was the biggest underdog given the injuries and everything that they dealt with this year, where everyone was going in with their strongest or relatively their strongest group. And, you know, you've got freshmen and sophomores with limited experience that the Syracuse team is really relying on to produce. So I think they, even though they lost, should be very proud. And then, you know, Boston College, I mean, talk about finishing strong with Rachel Hall's performance and just everything Charlotte North does. Bell Smith just becoming a impact player. I mean, she was impressive the whole season, but to just go from a freshman getting a couple goals to then being a difference maker in the tournament, game in and game out, was just unbelievable to watch. So it was, you know, hats off to Boston College. They really earned it.
It was, you know, there's definitely, it's hard to remain impartial when, you know, you're covering, you know, your college team. And, you know, as I was sitting across the field in the press box next to Tari, the two of us had a blast, you know, staring at the alumni base, you know, so many of your friends and loved ones cheering on Syracuse, you know, across from, again, a staff that over the years I've just, I have so much respect for what Acacia and Jen and Kayla and, you know, now Sam Apuzzo and Billy Bitter. I mean, talk about like the dream team there for those girls to learn and develop under. It was definitely, you know, when there's a championship trophy in the balance between those two sidelines, it's hard to root against anybody. And I think that, you know, as the game slowly went on, like Syracuse was just unable to tip the momentum back, especially in that second half. So I think the writing was on the wall throughout, you know, that second half. And I really did. Like, it was, I don't think that she thinks of it that way, but in a way, it's like, I feel like Kayla won a trophy for all of us. And like, there was just so much pride. And I think that that was like the juxtaposition of watching the tears in the eyes of, you know, so many Syracuse players, tears in Kayla's eyes, and knowing in that moment that Gary was so proud of his team for the body of work that they had put together throughout the course of the season, but at the same vein, so proud of Kayla, you know, a product of him and Syracuse. That was really cool and unique to see. And then again, I mean, watching Acacia celebrate with her kids. Honestly, I hopped in the car immediately after. I didn't even stay in Towson to work on my article. I worked on stuff when I got home because I was looking at the clock, and when the game ended up, I was like, you know, if I like bust tail to get out of here and I don't hit a ton of traffic, I can get home to put my daughter to bed, you know? And that was, in that moment, just seeing her celebrate with her, you know, with her children, her daughter storming out there, she's going over to the sideline, she's trying to get her son on the field. And he's like, I don't want to go. But then she just picks him up and carries him on. Like, it was just such a cool moment. And again, you know, you think of modeled behavior, and we've talked about it here with, you know, so many of the coaches that we've had the privilege of covering this year. So many of these coaches are moms, and they're working moms, and these hours that, you know, Division I, II, and III college coaches are working away from young families, it's not easy. So I think for her players, again, to just see, you know, the excitement she had in her face, how she was celebrating with her family, was really special for them too. You know, turning the page into the next conversation, coming out of Memorial Day weekend, I think there was little doubt in anyone's mind, especially with her record-breaking performance, that Charlotte North was going to win the Tewaraton. Rachel, you were there to see it happen. It was PLL training camp up there. That's where you were watching the game from afar over Memorial Day weekend. She shipped up to Boston with the other finalists. What was that Tewaraton trophy ceremony like? And, you know, I feel like it was like the Boston College fam showed up. They rolled deep into Gillette for Charlotte.
Yeah, it was during our opening weekend, and There was a few moments, honestly, watching. So COVID rules like prohibited us from really like interacting directly with a lot of, with the Tuaritan of them, because they, you know, we've got strict protocols in terms of testing and vaccination and making sure that we're keeping the players safe. So they were in like their separate area, so I could sort of watch them afar. And I mean, the BC team arrived like early afternoon and was tailgating the whole day. So by the time they rolled into the Tuaritan event, like, it was unbelievable to see the support for Charlotte North. They all had those amazing like Queen of the North shirts on.
I want that shirt.
So bad. I mean, if we like so bad.
Can we make a plug on this podcast to get those shirts?
So Acacia like promised me one, but I don't know. Yeah, we should. We just can't, because I was like, we should sell them, but you can't, the likeness and NCAA, we can't. But because we should sell them.
Can we just like accidentally pick them up from our front mailbox one day?
I mean, that would be amazing. So they were like, I think when it's that obvious who's going to win, it like kind of makes it more fun for everybody, because I think everyone kind of knew, to your point. But the crowd was, it's Boston, so they're like so into it. Obviously she wins, everybody goes crazy. They go to announce the men's, and like from the stand, you hear somebody say, "Give it to Charlotte," like the men's award too, which is like unreal. And then we honored them at halftime of the second game. It was a guy, I wanted to be on that team so bad. In that moment, they had been together celebrating for a week straight. Like, they've just been on this run. And they were having the time of their lives. Like, Acacia, it's just like, you could just, like, that moment of them with the trophy and the t-shirts and Charlotte and celebrating was so incredible to sort of watch. And they've really, I mean, the like victory lap situation they've been on, because the next day was like Charlotte was throwing out the first pitch at the Red Sox, and then they were going to the Bruins game, and then had been at the Governor's Mansion. Like, the way Boston embraced their championship and found ways to honor them throughout, it was just really fun and made me like very nostalgic for like teammate days, because they just were just, I mean, it's like living the dream, celebrating it a week later still. So super fun to kind of be on the outside watching that for sure.
It's it was actually pretty crazy. I mean, you looked at, like you said, I mean, the Boston College lacrosse team, everyone was in attendance, it seemed, but like parents who were just on the road down in Towson the weekend prior, they were tailgate, you know, it's like parents that were from Long Island. I mean, here in Connecticut, I recognize some families, Westchester, you know, cross country, like families flew up and drove up to Gillette to be there for Charlotte and to continue to celebrate with their daughters. It was really, really cool to see. And, you know, it was, I had kind of a unique lens on what Maggie Cook, Charlotte North's high school coach, was going through as well during that like 24-hour time frame. I urged her to write an article, and she wrote a great article on Inside the Cross about the whirlwind 24 hours that she was in. We were in San Carlos, California. Liz Hogan was getting married. I was in the wedding. Maggie officiated the wedding, and she did such a remarkable job. She left straight from the reception. We had to, well, so actually rewind like a few hours. I was zipping her up in her officiant dress, and I was the one that broke the zipper on her dress. So I don't think it was my fault. I think there was a faulty zip, whatever, malfunctioned, broke the dress. So Liz, we're late for pictures because Liz Hogan is not in her wedding gown. She's like on her hands and knees sewing Maggie into her dress. I mean, who knew she could sew? It was so impressive. But she's like sewing Maggie into her dress. So then Maggie, now go back to after the reception, Maggie's like, I can't go to the airport in this dress. Like, I need somebody to cut me out of this dress. So we're cutting Maggie out of the dress. You know, she puts on her USC lacrosse t-shirt because she has a couple of players that have played there. She heads to the airport, takes the only flight that could get her to Gillette in time because, you know, she booked it so late. There was a flight that laid over in Dallas, but she didn't have enough time to go home and change and shower. She lives in Dallas. So SFO to Dallas, to Boston, goes to the hotel, showers, rushes to Gillette, and she gets there just in time to see Charlotte North hoist the Tuaritan Trophy. So she was saying, she's like, you know, they're two of the most remarkable players I've ever had the privilege of coaching in my life. They're two friends now. And I, you know, they were two once in a lifetime, couldn't miss opportunities. And it's like, that was something where I was like, you have to write this. You know, it's like when you think of Liz Hogan and Charlotte North, the first thing you think of are, you know, they're rock stars. They're incredible players. We're going to talk about them and their US team a little bit later in this podcast, but it was, you know, I thought that sometimes it goes under the radar how much of an impact you have in your coach's life. You know, you think that some of your coaches that you've played for, they are some of the greatest presence in your life, but you know, what you give them in return and to see what Maggie, you know, did in that time frame to be there for two of her players was really special.
Yeah, her article was unbelievable. I mean, and just, you know, and the way she talks about Charlotte, and you know, I'm sure the way she talks about Hallie, you and me when she coached us, I'm sure she just doesn't tell us that as well. You know, she probably raves about us to other people because she actually coached us at Syracuse as well. So I'm just kidding. But Hallie's frozen now.
I'm here. I'm not frozen.
Oh. I didn't get my joke. Maggie talks about us just like she talks about Charlotte, I think.
I'm
she can
sure.
Write her next, she can write her next article about me and Hallie and how it was coaching us.
Yeah, totally. That's coming up next, part two. Let's actually, this is actually a nice natural segue into the coaching carousel. Rachel, this was, you know, top on your list. You were like, do we want to talk about this? Do we not? Maggie was our coach at Syracuse. We also have a coach that's no longer there. Rachel, we'll let you host this.
Yeah. I mean, you guys obviously have probably more feelings around this than I do, but I mean, I have a lot of questions for you, some which you may not want to answer, but like what, like two-parter. One, like Gary going to the men's program, like was this predestined? Like, how do you feel about it? I've heard people that are like, it's really messed up. He left the women to go to the men. Like it just feels like he's ditching them. But then also it's like, he is Gary Gate and he's never treated the women less. He's incredible. He's built a program. Like this was predestiny. Like part one, like what are your feelings on him? Like, you know, leaving the women's program in Syracuse to go to the men's.
Alyssa, why don't you go?
Okay, I'll go.
You go.
So, I mean, obviously we're heartbroken. I texted him calling him a traitor. I'm thrilled for him, honestly. You know, it's probably for him, you know, that one job that he would have wanted. And I can't blame him. It's like you always have just a special place in your heart for the program that you played for. And as close as he was when coaching the women's side, it still wasn't the program he played for and wasn't the program that he became Garrigate, Airgate phenomenon when he was a player. So I totally understand. And honestly, I think especially with him getting Petro down there, I can't even imagine, or up here, I can't even imagine like the type of recruit they're going to end up getting. Because, you know, if girls like me, when Gary got the job, were like, oh, I want to go play for Gary. If I was like that as a player and a recruit, can you imagine being a boys recruit, like watching them play and professionally in college and the battles that the two of them had? I just can't even imagine.
It's, you know, kind of, I mean, to echo what Alyssa said, there were, you know, we heard rumblings about this over Memorial Day weekend, you know, to just end. I think that for the first thing that came to my mind was, again, yeah, he came on staff, you know, fall of 2007, and he has given so much of himself to the women's program and, you know, raising the bar at Syracuse and really cultivating a culture, you know, within the 4 years for players there, some 5 and 6. You know, and certainly within an alumni network that I think is going to be like his greatest legacy. I mean, he's just created such a family atmosphere. But, you know, the first reaction I had to him taking that job was I was so proud of him. You know, again, I think it's like not many coaches have the opportunity to, and I'm not saying this is it for Gary. I mean, he's like, but like not really have the opportunity to close their career out where it all started, you know. In many ways, Syracuse, the Carrier Dome, the men's program, you know, Coach Simmons's legacy. It's like the house that built Gary when he first started playing lacrosse in the U.S. So, you know, I think that everyone that's close to the program, he, you know, he's always said he wanted to help Syracuse win their first national championship. And I think that, you know, certainly some of the candidates that are in the conversation, if, you know, if they were to get the job, he will have done just that, you know, played a really, really crucial and critical role in Syracuse's, you know, first ever championship, if and when it does happen down the road. And I think that there's maybe one job, as Alyssa said, you know, that he would ever entertain leaving the Syracuse women for, and that is the men's program. And I don't think anybody really faults him for that. It's certainly been, I think it was an emotional time for the players, you know, to be on such a high, to go to a national championship game. And, you know, my heart kind of goes out to them. And I, you know, I think what we're all waiting here, you know, the lacrosse community, Rachel, as you said, you know, certainly like the alumni network, those are some big shoes to fill. There's no secret in that.
So part two question. I feel like, and I don't know why I feel this way. Maybe it's because we speak so much and I'm like, I learned about the culture of Syracuse through you, the two of you, but I feel like it has to be a Syracuse alum. And I don't know why I feel that way. Maybe because there's so many like incredibly qualified Syracuse alum that would be incredible. Like, I mean, DePetris, Rowan, Tumalo, Trainer. I mean, Alyssa Murray, when you moved to upstate New York, I was like, I texted her. I'm like, is this why? Like, oh my gosh, like, is this happening? Like, conspiracy theory. like, wow. Breaking news. So I don't know if it's just because there's so many Syracuse alumni that are in the coaching world crushing it right now that I feel like it's predestined, or it's just like the rumors I'm hearing or whatever, but like, what are your thoughts? Like, tell me about like when you think it will happen and like what is the best thing sort of for the program.
You want me to go? You're pointing at me. Okay. yeah. I mean, so honestly, I think that a lot of people feel that way. You know, it's interesting. I do think that there are certain programs in, you know, I put Northwestern in the same light. You know, you look at what some of the alums in North Carolina are doing. You know, you look at programs that have such strong ties in the coaching world and, you know, really have had a lot of success in the coaching world too. Not just, oh, let's go hire a Syracuse alum because we think it should be an alum. There's some Syracuse alums that are like kicking ass in the college ranks right now. And, you know, I think a huge part of being a coach, you know, in addition to the X's and O's, it's, you know, being, you know, continuing that culture that Gary has there and, you know, certainly cultivating that alumni network, making sure that, you know, those bonds and those relationships are still forged. I mean, Alyssa and I consider Alyssa a good friend of mine and we never played together, you know, that's, you know, I know, love you. You know, I think that that's important. And we have, you know, we have a lot of pride again. I mean, that was, you know, as I'm watching the national championship game and I am literally looking at tears swell in the eyes of the Syracuse players and my heart goes out to them. I like can't even imagine how hard that was for Kayla, but at the same time, it's like, she's got so much pride and she's such a professional. And her, you know, job was Boston College that day and the same job that she had, you know, all season long. And I had so much pride watching her do that this year, looking at the success that Jill DePetris had. I mean, gosh, I was, you know, she has just been crushing it in the college ranks. Michelle Tumalo, I mean, I know Katie Rowan, I feel like I'm a little biased there. She is like, disclaimer, one of the most, you know, important people in my life, you know, one of my closest friends, probably like my biggest mentor in a way. We grew up playing in high school together, playing in college together. And, you know, I think that she's just such a remarkable coach. And I know that the four of them, and of course, there's many others, they also like bleed orange. And I think that that's something, I mean, Rachel, you have like your reunions or whatever it's called down there.
I also bleed orange. It's like a slightly different shade of orange.
It's just like a different shade, but like you get it. Like, you know, like, and I think that for Syracuse, for someone like Alyssa and I who've experienced it, it isn't this hard sell in recruiting because I'm like, oh my God, sign me up. I'll go back in time or just like, you know, sign Dempsey up. She'll be there in 20 years. But it's, you know, when you're recruiting in the ACC and you're recruiting against North Carolina, Notre Dame and Virginia, you know, I think it's got to take someone who has that passion and who has the ability to say, you know, come play under the lights of the Carrier Dome. Cause let me tell you how special it is. I've been there. Like this is a university that lacrosse like isn't bigger anywhere else. Come be a part of making the history on the women's side that, you know, again, you know, look at what the men have done. We want to make that happen here. And this entire community is behind you. So I feel like, I don't even know if I answered your question. I'm just going on a rant. Alyssa, you take it over.
I forgot the question.
Oh, I think like, do you think it has to be, Hallie, you did answer it. Like, I think, there's no reason, I guess there's no reason necessarily for them to look outside of the Syracuse alumni network. I mean, there's great coaches that didn't go to Syracuse, obviously, but like with that pool, like, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, I feel quite strongly that it should be a Syracuse alum. I think you're spot on. There are so many capable people, capable females for the role. I think that it's just, you know, there is plenty of people to choose from, and that it would honestly be a mistake for them to not hire within, because I just think, you know, if you're an alum, you know what the culture that Gary has cultivated is. You have already have a prior relationship with him to help the transition be easy, help the current players feel, you know, at home, even though their world was just totally rocked by him leaving. I think it needs to be an alum, but that is just my humble opinion, and I'm not a part of the athletics department. So hopefully they, you know, interview who they need to interview, and it all works out. So, but I agree. I think there's plenty of people to choose from.
It's, I mean, Rachel, I actually was having this question the other day, and this was a question posed to me that, you know, Chris Saylor, I feel like she actually is going to be the woman that coaches forever in the college ranks. But, you know, I feel like, again, it's like not comparing her to Gary. I mean, obviously they're very different coaches with certainly different tenures at, you know, their respective programs, but it's looking at a program like Princeton where I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, the current Princeton college, like the current Princeton alums within the college ranks, there aren't a ton, right? So it's like, I feel like there are certain programs that it's hard to even think of the next coach. Cause again, I feel like Coach Saylor is probably going to be there forever. But it's, you know, then you look at a program like, you know, if Kelly Monty Hiller were to ever leave Northwestern, it's like, there's so many talented coaches in the Northwestern coaching tree. Wouldn't it seem like a natural fit, or would it? I mean, I ask you that question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great question. Yeah. There's some programs that Princeton is one of them where you feel like it should, for me, like it needs to be an alum that understands the culture, but I think Laura Field is the only head coach, and there's a few Princeton alum that are assistants. And I don't think there may be somebody I'm forgetting, but there isn't a lot, to your point. Where Syracuse there is. When somebody is like a Chris or a Gary, and they are the program, they are the culture, they're a living embodiment of what that program is. When you think about them not there, it's like very scary to have somebody come in that doesn't live the way that they live that program and build that legacy. And that's why, yeah, like emotionally, like it has to be somebody that like played for Chris that like gets it. And wants to continue that. I've like asked Chris, if you ever retire, like we're gonna need a lot of heads up, a lot of therapy, a lot of discussions about it. We're all gonna have like really hard time with it. Someday I guess it'll have to happen. But until that day, obviously just enjoying every moment that she's part of Princeton. But I feel like, yeah, Kelly, absolutely. Like you want somebody that gets it and that can say, this is what it means to be part of this program. But a Northwestern with the coaching tree, it's like, yeah, it could be anyone that's been under Kelly, because she didn't go to Northwestern, right? Like she is the culture of that program, not necessarily maybe the school. So like somebody that learned under her, that understands it, and can provide that lift to the culture. And there's countless Northwestern Kelly Amonte disciples out in the coaching universe. So
disciples.
I know. I don't know. It's going to be, I mean, I hope it is. I hope it for your sake and for the program's sake, it's a Syracuse alum. And there's plenty of incredible women that are ready to step into that job. So maybe by our next recording, we'll have the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. That's maybe going to dictate when our next recording happens. You know, obviously it's also a year that, I call me crazy, I didn't think there would be a coaching carousel the way that we've seen so far this summer, coming out of this crazy year that we had. You know, I thought a lot of coaches, and especially the challenges that happened, you know, internally at a lot of these universities. I mean, we saw coaches that overcame, you know, that put together seasons, impressive seasons, that didn't even have fall time together as a team, because some of these programs, students weren't allowed on campus this fall. So it is really remarkable when you take a step back and you look at the body of work that was done in so many conferences and by so many coaching staffs to give these players a season. You know, you look at now some of the opportunities, you know, Villanova, Virginia Tech, Kristen Wagbo to Virginia Tech, what happens at Army now? I mean, did you think, Alyssa, Rachel, did you think we would be seeing so much movement in the college ranks coming out of this COVID year?
No, I mean, I think in some way, yes, because I think coaches, maybe this year was exhausting. And I think everybody learned a lot of, like, we learned a lot about life and like what matters to us this year. So maybe some coaches that went through it would be like, okay, I don't know that I'm going to keep doing this, or this is just maybe, you know, like people having those like sort of moments of like, what am I doing with my life? So there may be some percentage of that, but then the schools, like what these coaches accomplished and what they helped these kids through, like, yeah, it should be like kind of a free pass this year. I don't think anybody should be judged on their performance this season. There's just too many things that happen and too many obstacles to really fairly assess whether a coach is, you know, equipped or not. So yeah, I'm surprised in that sense. But yeah, I mean, the quick move for Kristen Wagbo to Virginia Tech, and then we've got Villanova open, Army, and I don't think it's done, because I think it's just going to, you know, whoever those hires are could potentially open up other spots as well.
It's, you know, I think this is, again, kind of a natural segue into the next topic we had on here. So many of those coaching candidates and, you know, certainly rock star future candidates, we're down at U.S. Lacrosse headquarters trying out for the U.S. national team. 36 players kind of made it out-ish. I mean, I feel like one thing I love that Jenny Levy and her staff have done, you know, they have this consistent pool of players that they're, you know, inviting to training weekends. So the players that didn't get selected, it's my understanding, out of this, you know, first tryout weekend, last weekend, they're still in the running. They could get invited back. So you look at the 36 players that were invited out of this training weekend to, you know, another training weekend in 2 weeks. You know, let's start with our attack rock star here. Alyssa, this team seems particularly stacked. I mean, they're stacked everywhere, but particularly stacked on the offensive end. You have, you know, the old guard, your fellow of teammates, Michelle, Kayla Trainer, you know, you have Molly Hendrick there, you know, you have players that are making it look like it's even better than they did 5 years ago, which is just hard to believe. And then you have the new kids on the block, Jamie Ortega, Charlotte North, you know, Sam Apuzzo is back out there. Is she new? Is she old? Is she a vet? She's kind of in that mix. Kylie O'Miller, how does this U.S. staff even begin to pick this attacking unit? Just seems like it's so dangerous in so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just crazy to see how good everyone is. It's like wild that at one point we all played together and were teammates. I think I managed to play with a bunch of them, but now watching them, I'm like, I could not move anywhere close to that pace. But I think being able to watch like Jamie Ortega, Katie Hogue, and all them play with, as you say, the old guard, it was just, it's so fun, and it just shows how good these players coming out of college are. I think they were definitely at an advantage being able to come right off of the college season, whereas the players that have already been graduated really haven't played in over a year and a half. I think their previous training weekend may have been in January, before COVID hit. But so it was a really long time. I talked to Taylor Cummings this weekend at one of the tournaments, and she's like, yeah, it was definitely an adjustment being able to having to just go full tilt after not playing. So I think I do like that there is that player pool where they can call on people, because you know it's going to take some time for people to get back into the swing of things. So if you didn't have your best weekend, didn't show as well as you would have wanted to, you still have that chance to do that.
It's it's really cool. I mean, Alyssa, you hosted kind of your Lax Chats live series on the Isle Women Instagram with Charlotte North and Rachel Hall. And, you know, you asked, you know, who are some players that you guys looked up to and kind of idolized. And, you know, Charlotte North, of course, says Kayla Traynor, who she's had some time to, you know, work with up at Boston College, but she says players like Michelle Tumalo, and they throw these names out, and to see these young players get an opportunity. You know, I remember when I was within the US program, that was always like the coolest thing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am saying a cheer in this huddle next to Acacia Walker and Kristen Shellman, like pinch me. It's, I think that's one of my favorite experiences kind of from the outside looking in, to know that, yes, I mean, we see Charlotte North and Jamie Ortega and Izzy Skane absolutely crushing the college ranks, but knowing that they're probably like fangirling a little bit next to some of the players they're getting to play with on the US level, Taylor Cummings being one of them. Rachel, on the defensive end, you know, you do kind of see Alice Mercer, Meg Dowdy, you know, Becca Block, you have Kristen Carr in this mix. You have a lot of, this is still, I feel like the offense, it's kind of like this mix of how do you plug in this all-star team? There could be a lot of fresh faces on the final roster, but the defense is holding strong. There's a lot of representation of players that were on that last World Cup team.
Yeah, I mean, Emma Trenchard's, I think, the only new face. And unfortunately, Courtney Waite isn't on this list, which I think she's excellent at defense. But yeah, I mean, they've moved KDO from midi to D, so she's on that. But it's a lot of last World Cup's crew. So yeah, attack is ridiculous. I have no idea how they're going to make any of those decisions, because you could literally take any of them, put the four of them on a field together, and I think they'd win a gold medal. So yeah, it's interesting how D, you know, there hasn't been the progression in terms of like bench strength on the defensive end to bring in new players. But I'm happy they get to play again so soon. You know, I think I tweeted this, like, having done US and trained alone with no guarantee that you're going to be on the team, and just like, it's exhausting, and mentally it's really hard to stay motivated, and you get inside your head about like, am I training hard enough? I don't know. And then you're like, your only evidence is like when you show up that weekend. And if you have an off weekend, it's just even more difficult. So, you know, kudos to these women for like sticking with it amidst the pandemic and like figuring out ways to train creatively. Marie moved down to UNC to kind of do it. So like those kind of sacrifices, I think, like, really proud of these women, and I can't wait to see, you know, home turf World Cup next year.
It's
going to be awesome.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to be so awesome.
It's going to be great. It's, you know, looking at that team, yeah, it's just gonna be, I can't wait. And you mentioned Marie. I mean, I heard she was like, everyone was like, I didn't know it was possible for Marie McCool to get any better, but like,
it was unbelievable.
Everyone was like, she was in the best shape of her life. She dominated every facet of the game. Like, she was on another level, which is just, again, like, crazy to think the obstacles that she's faced. I know she's moved around. I feel like her like home base over the last year was kind of like a pinball machine of sorts. And, you know, the fact that she just kept her head down, kept working hard, that's kind of, you know, a testament to her work ethic. Moving forward, you know, I think that we'll wrap up on this. We got a lot of questions about the new rules, but I think we're going to need some time in the next podcast to really unpack the NCAA rule suggestions and talk about some rules we want to see at the next level. But Rachel, we've seen some very unfortunate incidents on the club lacrosse circuit that, you know, we as a community, I think it's sparked a lot of internal dialogue and conversation. But, you know, if you just want to touch on, you know, what has been seen before Alyssa and I jump in and, you know, on the heels, especially on the heels of that, US Lacrosse made public their anti-harassment policy. But, you know, if you just want to touch on that a bit.
Yeah, there was two separate instances where young women were harassed, one based on her appearance, and opposing parents believed that she was illegally playing and they questioned her gender and really just flat out harassed her. And the other one was a player being harassed for wearing hearing aids. And it's, I mean, disgusting, I think, is the word that comes to mind. And like accountability, I think the tournament scene is pretty wild, wild west. Like anybody, any club can kind of show up and there's no sort of accountability for these parents' behavior and these coaches' behavior. And if these two instances aren't impetus for change or more strict rules around what is said on the sidelines by adults to children, then we're not doing as well as I think that we are and need to. I was at a tournament for my son this weekend. He is 10. He's just learning to play. And we, you know, I try not to yell because I think it's obnoxious when parents yell. I try and be just positive, which I do most of the time. But like, there was a little boy on the other team and he's like, "Dad, my ankle really hurts. I can't walk." And the dad's like, "You're going to need to grit it and suck it up, buddy." And the kid's like, "Okay." And like in the middle of a game, like his long pole is like three times taller than him. His head is in the helmet, like bobbling around. And I looked at my dad and I'm like, what is happening? Like, what are we doing to these kids as adults when these parents feel like they have the right to speak to another child about the way they look or what they have? And, you know, I think these tournament directors need, you know, and us as a whole need to really crack down on this behavior. If your tournament, if your team acts like this, you're out of the tournament and you're not allowed anymore. And that's that. And it's a shame for the kids, but until there's some consequences for this behavior, it's not going to change. And I feel like, you know, these two young ladies, women that had to deal with it, like we have to make a change, because I know we've known it's been going on around race and culture for a long time. And we haven't done enough on that end. And now we have these young girls being screamed at for ridiculous things that people want to judge them for. So, you know, I'm like pretty heated about it. And I feel like change needs to be made from the top down. Sorry, ran over.
No, rant, like so appreciated. It's, you know, they're, the first instance was brought to our attention. You know, Tari and I had a long chat. She actually connected me with both of the club directors. And, you know, as the women's editor at Inside the Cross, I kind of thought, you know, what's our role in this? And I think that there's a way to just kind of, you know, republish a statement in support. But I think, you know, the decision that we've made and an article that's going to be forthcoming, Beth Ann Mayer, is working really on, again, like you said, like that well-rounded piece, like, oh, it's a shame that this happened. And it's like, no, it's a shame that this continues to happen every weekend. And I think that's the biggest problem. And, you know, I coach a high school team, and there was an incident on an adjacent field this year where two parents in the stands, they got into a physical altercation. Security was on site. A parent was removed, you know, but a lot of the club events, they're private events, you know, they're happening at public or private, you know, properties or facilities, but a lot of the onus is on the club director to handle a lot of these events. You know, I've had countless conversations with club directors saying, I need to hire security. You know, I've had countless conversations where, you know, they are tasked with, you know, handling the schedule, the rosters, the check-in, and they're getting calls left and right. You have to come to XYZ field. This has happened. So in these instances, it really is, you know, Beth Ann, you know, she's reached out to the clubs and club directors involved for this article. And then, you know, she has also reached out to various club directors, that put on different events as well, and event directors. And then she also reached out to US Lacrosse. And I thought that, you know, Ebony, Preston Laurent put out, you know, a quote as US Lacrosse released their anti-harassment policy. She said, first, we wanted to create a strong anti-harassment and discrimination policy for all US Lacrosse events so we can lead by example. You know, we don't stand for harassment, discrimination, or intimidation in any form. And we want to make it a point of emphasis that it won't be tolerated at US Lacrosse events. The second part of this is we wanted to provide other leagues, lacrosse organizations, and tournament directors with a template that they should replicate and incorporate into their programming. And the latter part of that, I think, is the most important part of this. US Lacrosse is setting an example and also giving tournaments and clubs an example of, you know, what their toleration policy is, which is, you know, absolutely zero toleration policy. And I think, you know, you mentioned the two players that were, I would say, I mean, you know, really the first thing that came to my mind was like their bravery to step forward. These are, you know, teenage girls putting their name and their face out there and their words out there to, you know, shed a strong light on the harassment that they endured. And it like makes me tear up thinking about having to be a parent in that instance, or be a teammate or a coach in that instance, trying to console a player for being upset for something that is just such horrific behavior that they've endured. But, you know, for those individuals to come out, to see the support that this community has had around them, but then also to understand at the same vein, like it's up to us collectively to protect these athletes and to make sure that this behavior is stopped. And I think, you know, Alyssa, you have a unique lens. You are a club coach and club director, and some of the, you know, things that we have been discussing here and topics we've been discussing, you witnessed firsthand. You know, do you think it's on clubs to have conversations with their parents? You know, you are an extension of this team. This will not be tolerated.
Yeah, I mean, luckily I've not dealt with anything in regards to similar to what we're talking about. It's absolutely, you know, there's no words for it. It's really just so unbelievable. And first of all, I'm thinking, sorry if I sound different. I'm having technical difficulties with the move. So my microphone is different. But I 100% think that it's each club director's job to make sure that you keep your parents in check. And then if they are not in check, you need to remove them. And, you know, for me, it's been more their behavior in regards to how they act around college coaches, where I've had to address that and say, you know, we're going to have to ask you to leave the field if you're going to continue to, you know, complain to the refs or coach from the sideline, because, you know, it makes your kid look less desirable if you are, you know, that parent. And I think we've talked about that on other podcasts, where, you know, college coaches will cross you off the list if they hear, you know, Alyssa's dad, not that my dad did this, but you know, nonstop on the sideline, and yet they're sitting right there. It's like, who wants that in their program? They're watching the parents almost as much as they're watching the kid. But then it's just, you know, at some point there needs to be accountability from the parent side. And, you know, to see, hearing about this should really have every family reevaluate their behavior on the sideline. And I hope that this is something that can initiate that conversation where, you know, we've already had these so many issues in regards to racism on the field at club tournaments. And now it's coming down to, you know, appearance in different ways. And just the fact that people are all different, and, you know, lacrosse should be somewhere where that's accepted and embraced. But yet it seems like there are groups of people that are trying to push out these differences. And one of the things that I love so much about lacrosse is that, you know, you don't have to be the fastest, the strongest. You don't have to be, you know, the absolute most athletic to be good at lacrosse. There are so many ways to develop your skills to make lacrosse work for you. And what you look like has nothing to do with that. it's all the, it's what, the way that you figure out how you can develop as a player, and just your appearance, whether it's the color of your skin, the length of your hair, whatever it may be, it doesn't matter. And so if anyone feels that otherwise, then there is no place for that. And it's so disappointing as a club director. I cannot imagine how the club directors of both clubs feel. You know, if I were to hear that some of my teams and their parents were doing this, I would be mortified. And I would shut down the entire team and pull out of all events. But I mean, that would be me. But I just think it's just so horrific that, you know, it's absolutely unfortunate. And my heart breaks for all of the players that are involved.
It is. And it's also on us, I think, as leaders and coaches. You know, a lot of this behavior, unfortunately, it's happening on the sidelines. You know, whether it's the coaching sideline or, of course, the parent sideline, a lot of this behavior is happening on the field too. You know, mm-hmm. Rachel, I think, you know, we'll close it out. I'm curious what you have to say. You know, what's the example that's set at home? Like, have your children ever got in the car and said something like, oh, I heard this on the field? Or, I mean, so I think if it's, again, modeled behavior from a young age, developmental age, which you have children that play on those types of teams, of what sportsmanship looks like on and off the field, maybe those on-field behaviors we wouldn't see and hear as much. You know, have you ever had to deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten in the car with the kids and they said if the other team was saying mean things or, and not to the level of that what happened this weekend, but this weekend, Grayson had some teammates that I thought took some pretty cheap shots at other kids. And I was embarrassed, like, why are these kids, you know, I think they were just bad penalties. And after the game they lost and he was like starting to complain, the refs, the other team, you know, we had two cars because we didn't fit in the one car because we were going to places. And I turned to my husband, I was like, you need to have a conversation with him on the way home about what's appropriate, like sportsmanship, referee communication, like all this stuff. Because, you know, they got off the field and his team was complaining and the parents were yelling. And I was like, by the time you get home, like he needs to know like what is okay and what's not okay. And he got out of the car, it was like an hour ride. And I was like, then we talked about it and his whole mindset had shifted because, yeah, they hear the coaches complaining, they hear kids complaining, parents screaming at refs. And like, if that's what they hear, like that's what they think is right. And you're absolutely right. All of it starts at home. And then these coaches need to be accountable. Alyssa, like I 100% agree with you. That team is done. And like apologies to the kids who did nothing, but like this is a consequence because if these parents can't be controlled, then they shouldn't be allowed anywhere near a lacrosse field.
It's and I think it is. I mean, it's ultimately like you are a representative on behalf of your team the whole way up, right? You know, the goal, I think, for a lot of these kids playing at the youth level is to maybe make the middle school team, to make that town team. The town team, if you've made that, you want to make your high school team. The high school team, I mean, hey, maybe you want to play at the next level in college. The whole way up, there is that effect that if you do something, you know, that may affect your team's ability to compete. So I think, again, that example set, and then, of course, you know, everything just coming out of this weekend, you know, I think the more conversations, Rachel, like you said, you had, your husband had with your son, the better for awareness. I mean, I you need to just write a book on parenting and share it with Alyssa.
Come chill at our house for a week and then like revise that statement. But
Dempsey's going to the playground, like throwing wood chips and she can hardly speak, but I need to get in the car and figure out how to give her that pep talk. So by the time she gets home, she's like, you're right. Throwing wood chips is not
was wrong. It's the lesson. And my dad taught me there's a lesson in everything. We need to, yeah. You know, it's sure. But yeah, no, I think it's hard, but these kids deserve better from us. I mean, we are the adults. Like that's the thing. I don't know why we expect kids to act right when the adults can't even act right.
It is. I think that's the, we'll end on that note. There's a lesson in everything. And the kids deserve better. We will be back next week, maybe the week after. We'll try to get on, you know, with Alyssa, there's a lot going on, the move, the baby, there's a lot of moving pieces, but we'll be actually together, Alyssa. Maybe we'll record together so my audio doesn't.
Oh, yeah. I got to get Wi-Fi. My hotspot wasn't doing me any favors today.
We'll share the mic from the Isle Women Committed Academy. Signing off, one more note. Obviously, this is the Playing Catch Up podcast powered by Unleashed Overnight. Rachel, coming up.
1 month out from Unleashed. Actually, next time I'll give you like a summary because we've got some fun stuff in the works for it. It's just not quite like finished, but so excited. I'll be down in IMG July 13th.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to hear maybe with the Queen of the North shirt that's going to magically appear in our mailboxes, maybe the Unleashed Overnight shirt will too, or maybe a hat, you know.
Anything. Swag. I got swag.
All right. Perfect. We'll take it. Thanks again for everyone tuning in. We will catch you next time.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.